You're listening to Wolves Potluck.
Welcome back to season 3 of Golden Hour, a podcast celebrating Asian musicians. I'm your host, Charlene Kay.
And I'm Dave Yim.
This is so exciting, Dave. Dave, what's up? How are you? How have you been? Tell us what's been going on.
Yes, we are in season 3 of the podcast. We've been off the air, but we've been very busy getting things ready for season 3. One of the big updates we have, you might have heard a little jingle at the beginning of this episode. That's because we have joined the Potluck Podcast Collective, which we're super happy about. This is a collective of independent Asian American podcasters highlighting the stories, voices, and perspectives of the Asian diaspora. So obviously, we were super stoked to be part of this because that's what we're doing just through a music lens. There's a ton of different shows about current events, pop culture, history, books. I think there's one about all the Asians on Star Trek. So, you know, broad stuff, niche stuff, all of your Asian stuff. You'll hear some snippets from some of the shows in the middle of these episodes so you can get a taste of who else is in the collective. So yeah, we're super happy to be a part of the Potluck Podcast Collective. Thank you guys for having us. And we also are just coming off of our third Golden Hour Fest in Brooklyn. Tell us about that, Charlene.
Oh my gosh, I'm not recovered from it yet. We spent the whole summer planning this festival. It was going to be outside, and then a tropical storm hit New York. So we moved the whole thing inside. We've done 3 in the span of a year and a half, but this one was the best one yet. I'm so happy with how it went. Our secret special guest headliner was Michelle, which was extremely hard to keep a secret. And it was so exciting to see the looks on everybody's faces when they came out because they have been so buzzy lately. They just played Lollapalooza. And it was really exciting to, as a previous podcast guest, to have them be in the flesh and to be able to celebrate with them.
Mm-hmm.
We also had Juicy Lou, which is just by itself the best drag name that I've ever heard.
Juicy Lou crushed it. She had the audience, the palm of her hand, so funny.
Yes, incorporated stand-up moments from Margaret Cho and Ali Wong and like made them very theatrical and interactive. She was in the crowd the whole time and was just outrageous. It was mind-blowing.
We also had the debut performance of Saffron Lips, who is fronted by Stephanie Park, who was the second ever guest on Golden Hour back in season 1. That was 3 years ago.
No, crazy. That was...
No, it's 2 years ago.
Okay, I was like, that's not
I'm accelerating
right.
time on us.
Don't.
Yes, no. But that was awesome. They crushed it. And yeah, you can check out Michelle's episode from season 2. Which was, I think, came out earlier this year. Great fest, had a ball, as we always do. And we were selling merch there. And
yes, we were.
If you would like to get more merch and weren't able to make it, we are selling it on our website,
which is goldenhourpod.com. I have been putting my entire blood, sweat, and tears into this website and into all the merch. I'm so proud of it. I think it's some of the coolest shit I've ever made. The sweater that I've created is a dragon that is shredding and melting the microphone with his fiery breath as
it's
he's
so
singing.
Metal. It's so
or she.
Metal.
Maybe it's a non-binary dragon. We don't
they.
Know. They, yes. Genderless dragon.
Yes.
I'm just stoked about it. And everyone that I've seen wearing it at the festival looked so cute. And I'm just really proud to have it out in the world. So if you would like to look as cool and support the podcast, you can go to goldenhourpod.com. And if you're here listening, we love you so much that we're going to give you a little discount. It's going to be a 10% discount on the merch. And the code is going to be
AZN. 2023. That's the letters A, the letter Z, the letter N, 2023. Get your 10%. We got sweaters. We got hats. We got t-shirts. We got mugs. I'm going to put them in the mail if you order them.
Yes.
Help support the pod.
It's fall, so you're going to want those beanies and sweaters like ASAP.
Sipping some hot tea, wearing your sweater.
Oh, you're going to look so cute.
In your mug.
It's cuffing season.
With your hat.
You're not going to be able to keep the honeys away. We were recently on Asian Not Asian podcast with another buddy of ours, Mike Nguyen. They have a really cute segment on their podcast called Fit Checks, where they like talk about what they're wearing, and it's they ask their guest what they're wearing and in like a non-creepy way. It's just very cute. And we were like, what's a segment that we could have on our podcast that would be cute?
So we were thinking we wanted to maybe elevate an Asian American, an Asian person who's been in the news, who's been making waves. So we were still workshopping the name of this segment, but my wife Deb came up with the term golden shower, where we will shower this person with praise.
Not pee on them.
But of course, the implication is there. We're still workshopping that name. If you guys have any ideas of what this segment to be called, we would love to hear your thoughts.
Please, just give us a better name than Golden Shower.
Golden Shower will be hard to beat.
but we might be stuck with it now.
Now that we've said it, yeah. So Charlene, who is your Golden Shower recipient of the month?
Oh my God. Okay. One special Asian I've been thinking about a lot recently is Olivia Rodrigo.
New album.
Her new album. She doesn't need any promo, but her new album, Guts, I just love it. It's like so Riot Girl. Like, she's obviously so influenced by bands that I love, like The Breeders. And like, she's getting newer inspirations from more current bands like Wet Leg. And I love all like the talky stuff that she's doing. I think she's such a brilliant artist and songwriter. And the intro, the opening track of the album is this song called All American Bitch, which I can't stop thinking about. And it has these lyrics that I really relate to as an Asian woman, where the verses are very, it's almost like a chorale where you can imagine people like putting their hands in a prayer, and it's very like major acoustic guitar picked. And the lyrics are like, I'm grateful all the time. And then in the choruses, it just explodes into this like bratty anger of being put into these boxes of like what women are meant to be in society. And she's so young, and I really related to it. And you're just doing great, honey. So just like, keep going. You're the recipient of my golden shower.
It's an excellent album. I haven't dug into it too much yet, but I gave it one listen through. I'm excited to keep digging into it. So congratulations, Olivia. You are the recipient of this month's golden shower.
Golden shower. I mean, it rhymes with golden hour. Like,
it's kind of perfect.
Deb's a hot genius.
So Charlene, our guest today, you interviewed back in April. They're a new, very buzzy artist who goes by the name Miss Grit, whose given name is Margaret Son. Tell me about your conversation with them.
Yes, I've had my eye on Miss Grit for a long time. Their music caught my ear because they have such a distinct guitar playing style, and I'm always looking for other femme-presenting and non-binary Asian shredders. And they've spent the past year touring, opening for artists like Bartiz Strange and Nation of Language. They've been playing every major music festival. Their album has topped year-end lists by everyone from NPR to Rolling Stone. In this conversation, we really bonded, particularly over our mutual love of St. Vincent, who Margaret says was the reason they bought a guitar. You can hear shades of St. Vincent in their music, particularly because what struck me about their music was this very larger-than-life, orchestral, kind of cinematic quality that centers around themes of technology, AI, and what it actually means to be a human or a sentient being on this earth. Their latest album, Follow the Cyborg, tells all of these stories interwoven with very tasteful, beautiful guitar playing. And the album explores a lot of these ideas lyrically, which Margaret says relates to how she feels about her own queer identity and how it can, like a cyborg, feel kind of other or alien at times. But that certainly wasn't the case with our conversation. We hit it off like a house on fire. We're just talking about pedals and shredding, and it feels so good to meet a kindred spirit like this. So I'm just very excited about this conversation, and I'm honored to share their talent with you. Here's a clip of Miss Grit's song, Follow the Cyborg. So, without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Margaret Son, aka Miss Grit. Margaret, it is so wonderful to have you on the podcast. I've been wanting to interview you for about a year, which is crazy, and I'm so glad that we were finally able to make this happen. How are you? Where are you? Tell me how your overall emotional state is right now.
I'm so good. I'm just really, really happy to be here talking to you. It's been a long time in the process. I'm very, very honored. I'm right now in Manchester in the United Kingdom. And on a off day, have a couple more shows with supporting Bart T. Strange right now. It's been a really good time.
Yes. Tell me how the tour's going. How long are you out for? What have some of your favorite shows been?
Yeah, I've been out for about like a week now. I've kind of like lost track of the days a bit, but I think we've had 5 shows maybe. We've hit Southampton, London, Glasgow, Nottingham, and then Manchester last night. It's been really crazy. I haven't played really this many consecutive shows like ever, so I'm getting so many like good practices under my belt, and it feels really good to like be able to feel a bit more secure in my live set, because that's always been something that's like happened so sporadically that I haven't had the time yet to really feel comfortable or like have fun playing. So it's been a really nice experience, definitely.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah, I can imagine that it's like a muscle, right? Every night you discover something new within that structure. I do miss that about touring. I remember feeling like, I don't feel like this now, but when I was touring a lot with San Fermin, I was like, my voice sounds great. And like, I've been in this like groove of like hitting the pocket of taking care of myself in the ways that I need to when you're living out of a van. And it really is such a unique experience that touring musicians have, because we're partly in survival mode all the time. My friend Ellis put it best. He was like, for 90% of the day, you're like half dead. And then for 10% of the day, you're like more alive than you've ever been.
Exactly. Yeah, I totally feel that. It's a kind of sad, torturous like way to live, but I think the pros outweigh the cons.
Yes, yes. What are your favorite road snacks?
Oh, okay. So something I did this trip that was like a total like, I'm going to do it again, definitely. Once we got into Southampton, I hit up it was called the Oriental store that I went to. So I went to go buy I'm pretty sure they're Vietnamese rice cracker cake things.
Did it have the racist chopstick font?
No, it actually didn't. Like, this was like a legit like Vietnamese store, but it was called like Oriental store. So I guess it's like pretty, I don't know, great, different over here, but it was a really good road snack, because I didn't feel like gross after eating it, you know, so I felt like quenched my hunger. So
That's really important intel for touring musicians listening to this.
I, especially for me, like when I eat at home, like the healthy food that I eat is usually just like Asian like healthy food, you know, so I don't really eat a lot of like American healthy food, I feel like. Yeah. So it's just really important for me to like get that Asian grocery store run in the mix. So
God, can you imagine if American groceries or American gas stations had Asian snacks at them?
I know. I would be the healthiest person alive, honestly. Yeah.
Just like some spam musubi.
Totally.
Oh man, it would be so comforting.
Yes.
I'm such a big fan of yours. I've been listening to your album nonstop. I'm also a guitar player, and I see the ways in which you're using the instrument with your own unique voice and your own experience, and also I through an Asian lens as well. In addition to being a musician and a storyteller, I've been so drawn to your work, and I want to talk to you all about the creation behind this album and all the various influences that shaped it, because you are not just someone who draws inspiration from music. You're someone who draws inspiration from film and anime and pop culture at large. I'm sure you get this all the time, but I hear shades of St. Vincent and Bjork mm-hmm. and lots of other pioneers that storytell in a way that kind of incorporates technology into their music. So let's start at the beginning. I want to get into your album, your fantastic new album called Follow the Cyborg. But let's go back a little bit, and I'd love to hear about your upbringing and mm-hmm. your first experiences with music and how you resonated with it.
Yeah, totally. So I started playing guitar when I was 6 years old. So it was like first grade. And growing up, my parents were really into music. Like, they always played music around the house, but neither of them were really musicians, or my family doesn't really have a history of that, besides like here and there, piano players. But my dad always played like Led Zeppelin and Talking Heads. And then my mom always played The Cure and Fiona Apple. And so those were just like already like really big influences for me growing up. And I started playing acoustic guitar in first grade. And then I started learning classical guitar just to get in that like exercise.
Wow.
And then
in first grade? Damn, girl.
Once I started, I think classical guitar was in like third or fourth grade, but yeah.
That's incredible. What were some of your first songs that you learned? Do you remember?
I don't remember, but like the ones that I remember learning from my first, very first teacher were like Blackbird and Over the Hills and Far Away by Led Zeppelin.
Yes. And like classic.
And I know like they sound like those are not like super simple, but I think I played them in a really simple way. And then I was able to kind of like practice them to be a bit more complicated. So I think those were like good starter ones, weirdly.
Yes.
But yeah, I started getting really into like St. Vincent, of course, in like fifth grade and middle school. I had an uncle who put a bunch of like 2000s indie rock artists from New York like on a little thumb drive and gave it to me. And I got totally taken away by that scene. And it's funny to like talking. Yeah, I know. It's funny talking to you about this because I feel like so connected to like your guitar playing and like the way that you emote through your guitar. I feel like such a like we see like a maybe we have similar.
We speak the same language.
Like, yeah, totally.
Yes. I feel like we could just geek out about St. Vincent.
I know.
What concerts have you seen, and what's your favorite album of hers song / sound?
Yeah. Well, I think my favorite song from her is Now because that was like the first song that I've ever heard. And I think that like that's the one that like really opened the doors.
I really hear that in your music.
Oh, cool.
It's like the first track on the first album.
Yeah, yeah. It is the first one that I heard.
Yeah.
And like, it just like blew the doors wide open for me. Cause it like, I think for me as someone who was like listening to like the Jonas Brothers at that time, like hearing.
also important.
But like, that was like a good song to get me out of like that boy band phase or Paramore phase, which also I still stayed in and like have total respect for, but it was a good like little departure for me. And I my favorite album I think is Strange Mercy, definitely. Just like some of those like ballads on there are just like beautiful. And I've seen her, I think weirdly I've only seen her I think two times. I saw her when she was doing the piano solo thing of Mass Seduction.
Cool.
Yeah, which was beautiful. And then I saw her Mass Seduction tour at King's Theater, which was
cool.
Also amazing.
she's
amazing.
She changed my life, definitely.
Yeah, for real. I basically bought a guitar because of her. Electric.
Totally. I read that you did that, and I loved it. I discovered her in college, and I bought her record from a local record store. And I remember listening to Now and like walking around and marveling at how orchestral it was, because that was it was very of that time. but it completely holds up. And I was super into Sufjan Stevens and Rufus Wainwright at the time. And they have this very maximalist, like, more is more quality about it. And totally. I just loved the way that she blended acoustic guitars in the mix with that really gnarly, like, your lips are red kind of tone.
Yeah.
And I'd never heard anything like that before. It was like super cinematic in a way that like rock music doesn't tend to be. And I think that's the beauty of queer rock music also, is that it like brings such a different dimension to what the patriarchal idea of like rock music is.
Totally. Yeah, I totally feel that. I'm also curious, were you in orchestra when you were younger?
Oh, yes.
Like,
oh, yes.
You have a classical background, right? I feel that too. Because like something that attracted me to like St. Vincent's music, Sufjan Stevens, Arcade Fire, was like that orchestral kind of like cinematic thing. And yeah, I was a cellist like growing up, so I relate to that.
Yes, I love that everyone on this show has like a secret nerdy Asian past. It all, it's sort of an unspoken requirement. We don't require it, but it always comes out consistently. Makes perfect sense why we all connect, because we all have classical music trauma.
Yes.
Yeah, I played piano.
Amazing.
And so that was my torture method of choice back then. So after you started playing guitar, how did that develop into you writing your own music and like starting to perform and stuff like that?
Yeah, it actually took me like a really long time to start writing music, just because it's something that I kind of saw as like my lifelong dream, or what I wanted to do in life was to like be a musician and be an artist and write songs. So with that, I kind of like put a lot of pressure on myself, and I put off songwriting until I was basically in college. I wrote like a few songs here and there, like in high school, but I was just really, I think I was too like uptight, or maybe like I felt too much pressure about writing music during that time. So it took me a while to get into, but throughout high school, I was just like performing in cover bands, like cover bands.
Yes.
It wasn't until my sophomore year in college that I decided to try to write my own music. And before then, too, I was just playing guitar in like other people's bands and just happy, you know, to be playing music in general. So, it was kind of, I guess, a slow beginning. But I value that time I took.
Being a guitar player first, did it take you a minute to start to write lyrics and melodies, or was that already there and then it just took a minute to have the confidence to put it out there with the guitar playing?
I feel like it really was the lyrics that have always slowed me down a lot, or given me the most like anxiety, I think, just because I've never been super great like with words. I feel like I had a lot of social anxiety growing up, and just like followed me into college. And I think just committing to vocalizing like a certain thing felt really scary for me. So I think that was the biggest thing that was giving me a hard time. But
I ask because it took me a long time, and I wonder if you can relate to this, to embrace my storytelling aspect in addition to being a good guitar player. And I have had, I think women and non-binary people have such a unique journey of squaring being technically good in a climate that prioritizes the male gaze. And so I was always trying to prove myself. There was a period of time where I first started performing where I was like, I want as much respect as any male guitar player. And I overcompensated with my technical ability. And I made it more about hiding behind the guitar instead of wanting to tell my story and like talk about how I really felt. And so it took me years until I was like, honestly, in my 30s to be like, okay, they can all exist together.
Yeah, that's so interesting because I like definitely felt the exact same way, like going to school for music technology and like being with the bros and stuff. No. I feel like I often had to like compensate for that. And like, I feel like I felt myself kind of manipulating how I projected myself or emoted to kind of fit in with like the crowd, I guess, or not be looked at as weaker or anything. And so definitely like finding my like most authentic voice that I want to like, you know, speak in order to reflect myself accurately. That was like a huge, yeah. I feel like I still am like figuring it out, but it's just like, yeah, being a non-binary person or femme in music is just about, yeah, figuring out like what is at your core that you can express like freely and not be worried about all these things that you've learned like throughout like growing as a musician and stuff. Yeah.
And I love that kind of, we talked to Tao Nguyen about this in our interview with her, but she was like, being queer kind of puts you outside of all of that, which is a beautiful thing.
And yeah, that's no true.
Yeah. And she was like, you're no longer like in the traditional structure of what it means to be a woman in society. Like you can kind of make your own rules, which I think is awesome and really
That's
inspiring.
So true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so true. Because when I was like, over the pandemic is when I like decided to change my pronouns and stuff. And that was a really like liberating process because I was all of a sudden like, oh my God, I don't have to like be this specific person that I thought I was like supposed to be. So and then I could have the like freedom to just express myself however I wanted to and stuff. So yeah, I totally agree with that sentiment.
Yeah. Tell me about your experience majoring in music technology. What does that mean?
Yeah.
And is it engineering or like what gravitated you towards that and how did it inform your writing?
Yeah, well, I actually applied to NYU for music composition and I did my first semester for music composition, but then I had always had in my mind that I wanted to do music tech, but it's funny, I like when I was applying to NYU, I was like, oh, there's no way I'm going to get accepted for music tech because I don't have any skill set yet for that. And like, I think I just was like belittling myself to like think that I couldn't do it yet. But yeah, and then I decided to switch over because I was like, yeah, this is cool. This is what I want to do. And it's, yeah, the music tech major is kind of like an umbrella major where people can study like analog recording or digital recording, production techniques or audio for video or audio for video games. There's also like different like learning different music softwares like Max MSP and stuff and kind of getting slightly into like coding. And one of the things I was really interested in was their analog electronic courses, which were kind of like building circuits on breadboards and then making like oscillators from them or guitar pedals. Yeah, so I was like really, really into that. And that was kind of like what I was hoping to like graduate for and like then like do like work for a pedal company. But then I dropped out and didn't finish the degree, but yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, you still can create a bread pedal. That would be sick.
Yeah, true.
So you started to write music. You dropped out of college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did things go after that? When did you start Miss Grit and put your intention into building that?
Yeah, I started it my sophomore year of college and then was releasing things and I think I just like felt like I was better to spend my time just trying to focus on creating this project instead of like finishing my degree, which I had like just silly like core classes that I needed to finish. But I just really wanted to go for it and like I just saw the opening to kind of like just take myself out of school and really focus on figuring out what it was that I wanted to communicate like through my art. And I was like very privileged that I like was able to do that. And yeah, I ended up releasing a couple EPs, and then yeah, this past year releasing my album. So
yes,
it's been a fun little ride.
Yes. And the mandatory question for this Asian podcast is, how did your parents feel about you dropping out of school?
Weirdly, like, honestly, they're so super supportive, like super, super supportive. Yeah.
That's amazing.
I think, like, yeah, growing up, it was like, I wasn't sure where I stood, like, with wanting to, like, pursue music, just because of, like, definitely the stereotypes and, like, how like, money was, like, tight, of course, like, at some point during those, like, couple of hard years, like, in the 2000s. But I was really, like, moved that my parents were actually very supportive, because it kind of felt like they saw, like, something important in me, and, like, it felt really nice that they were genuinely, like, yeah, you should, go ahead and do this thing.
That's awesome. Yes. And it seems like it's paid off so much. I feel like you're one of the buzziest artists that I've encountered. You've been in the press so much about your new album, Follow the Cyborg. And we were talking earlier about this aspect of your storytelling coming after your guitar playing, which is so fascinating to me, because I feel like a core part of this album cycle is this world that you've created. Mm-hmm. And it feels like a movie or something within itself, because it is a concept album.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, totally. I grew up like really loving concept albums. So just like, I've always loved that. And like, I got, of course, really, I was just like a hipster kid, I think. And I got really into like vinyl and stuff, and like buying vinyl from like Urban Outfitters and stuff. but I just was really into listening to like full albums. And so like, that was just the only really way I knew to like create, I think, was to like think in that way. So yeah, it was over the pandemic, and I was starting to write a few songs. And the first song that I wrote off this record was Like You. And it had a different melody. It had like different lyrics, different like, content that it was about, song content. But I was really inspired by some of the essays that I was reading at that time. One of them, Gia Tolentino's essay, Always Be Optimizing. That's where I got the title also, is she has a quote in there. I'm going to forget what the quote is, but something along the lines of like, what if we chose to follow the cyborg and, grasp our own artificiality and turn it into something like liberating and powerful. And I think I really was moved by that sentiment, because I had grown up really loving like sci-fi movies, movies involving like cyborg protagonists, especially her and the movie Ex Machina, and Ghost in the Shell, the anime, not the live action version.
important distinction.
And I was also watching a lot of anime during the pandemic too, like Serial Experiments Lane, and a lot of films by Satoshi Kon. And there's just something really powerful in those types of narratives that involve like usually like a female like cyborg kind of taking their power into their own hands and liberating themselves from their creators that are oppressing them. And also in like films like Ghost in the Shell, like being able to move towards like a binary-less like gender expression was like really beautiful as well. And so just so much of like that narrative and the arc of the cyborg was just like so moving to me. And yeah, I just felt really inspired at that time to just make it a whole thing.
But we're still here, and we're going strong.
It's an exciting time in Asian America. There are more movies, TV shows, books, and music reflecting us than ever. But all of these represent just a small slice of Asian American culture and experiences. So what do? Tell more slices. Asian Americana is a show that explores these slices of distinctly Asian American culture and history. We've talked about how Chinese Americans built California's Sacramento Delta, the art scene turns gallery institution giant robot, a play that explores the lost Cambodian pop music of the 60s and 70s, and, of course, boba, just to name a few stories. You can find Asian Americana at asianamericana.com or on your podcast app. And we're getting tired of proving we belong.
You mentioned earlier that you changed your pronouns during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Which is also when you were writing this album.
Yeah, it was. It was, kind of weird.
Did you feel like the writing of it informed your perception of your gender identity?
Yeah, I think oftentimes when I'm writing lyrics, I come at it from like a really idealistic way of like how I want to perceive the world. And so even though my inner monologue isn't always like the healthiest, you know, like I'm down on myself a lot and have a lot of insecurities, of course. But I think writing lyrics, I'm always trying to almost like hold myself to my own words and like make myself see myself for the things that I love about myself and everything. And figure out how I want to like make my future out to be, I guess, or future perspective of the world, I guess, or myself even. So, I feel like definitely I was really just, and I felt like motivated and like momentum to really grasp onto my own identity and be able to. I think the biggest thing for me about changing my pronouns was I was too scared to like ask people. Like, I was too scared to be like, you guys, this is like how I want to be referred to. Mm-hmm. And I just did, of course, like, didn't want to take up space. I didn't want like to make things hard on someone else, but
it's a very Asian thing.
Yeah. So I was just kind of like, I think I need to like hold myself with a bit more respect and do things that are going to make me happier. So,
that's so beautiful that art can do that.
Yeah,
that you're creating a narrative. You're writing a story based on a character that you wanted to be, and in creating that world, you built a new version of yourself.
Yeah. I guess it's so weird because I like haven't really been able to like reflect on the album in that way yet. But like, doing interviews and talking with people, it's like it's nice to kind of be like, oh, that was cool. that was a nice thing to come out of the album.
Yeah, I think all the time about how I look at lyrics from past works and I'm like, that's really interesting that I said it that way. I must have been going through that, like, because lyrics are so subconscious they almost describe the future in a way. They give you clues for your future self as to how you were really feeling when you can't say it literally. And so I appreciate that so much about the creative process. So your song Phone Clone, I related to a lot because I think that this is a femme thing and also an Asian thing. We deal with imposter syndrome all the time. And it's kind of like you were talking about, you didn't want to inconvenience people to remember your new pronouns, which I feel so aligned with in areas of my life where I'm afraid to ask for what I want or think that I don't deserve something. And you have this lyric in Phone Clone that's, hold up your hands if you can't hold up the act. Hold up your hands if your two lives overlap. So I'm curious, in what ways do you confront that as a creative person? And how do you navigate that living your dream? Because you are a working, thriving musician and you're touring all over the world. It's it's really incredible to see. And yet, no matter how successful you get, there's always going to be that voice, I feel like. So how do you navigate that?
I think something I've been also like thinking a lot about on tour is like how like crazy the mental game of like being an artist is, I feel like. It can really take you far away from yourself, I feel like. You're getting so much validation and like not a lot of people telling you no, which is so dangerous for anyone. Like it doesn't matter like how grounded you are as a person. It's just like a weird thing. I've been finding myself just really trying to like really just like on tour connect with who I am and make sure I'm like doing things that make me happy and not necessarily things that I think I should be doing. And I'm trying to, not like follow someone's idea, I guess, of a touring musician or a musician in general, and just kind of keep things the way I like them, I think, and not worry about too much of like external things. Yeah.
Oh, that is so wise. You're right. It is important to keep grounding with yourself when people are applauding for you every night. I love that. And that's that lyric to me, when your two lives overlap.
Yeah. Hannah Montana.
Yo, Miss Grit Montana.
Miss Grit Montana. I think that's just like my constant daily worry, is like making sure my outer self and my inner self are aligned and I'm not like getting too separate from myself, I guess. And that's like also, I feel like, directly correlated to my happiness. So doing that just makes me feel better.
Yeah, that's so self-aware. Do you have any particular practices that you have to ground yourself and make sure that you feel in alignment?
I guess one thing, I have never really gotten into mantras, but I tried in the new year. I just wanted to like do at least one new thing in the new year. And something I've been telling myself whenever I get like anxious, or it can happen either way. Like if I feel like I'm a lesser person, or if I'm like feeling like really like I'm a hot shit or something, I'll like make sure, I'll just like remind myself like I'm a neutral being, like I'm a neutral person. I think often when I'm feeling really anxious, I often feel like I'm not worthy, or not capable of like being liked by people. And so I think just reminding myself that I am like a neutral being, and I like can forgive myself, and I can also like have like the confidence to like take up space as well and like not be too worried, I guess. So that's one thing I've been doing.
It's so interesting because that seems so aligned with the idea of the cyborg as a neutral, inanimate being that you can project emotions or feeling onto, and you can build into whatever you want it to be. It feels very resonant in that way when I'm thinking about other songs from your album. And the way they keep saying that you come back to your neutrality oddly reminds me a lot of Buddhist thinkings, where when you meditate, you're emptying out and everything is sort of coming back to this notion of there's no good or bad, and there's only what exists, and that things always kind of level out. Like we say that something is good, but we don't know. Maybe it's not, or something bad could turn out to be a blessing.
Yeah, totally. I never really studied Buddhism like formally, but my family does like have, I think they follow and believe in like a lot of Buddhist beliefs, just like not super organized about it. But I think that's like such a powerful thing to like follow. And also like it always calms my anxiety whenever I feel myself like just having like thought after thought after thought, just like reminding myself that like this world is all like about perception and like illusions, and it's really like we're all neutral beings.
Yes. I'm gonna be thinking about that after this long after this interview. Tell me about your parents. You are half Korean.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear about your upbringing, and I'd love to hear how you connect with your heritage in that way, and, you know, both aspects of it.
Yeah, I kind of have, I guess every Asian American has just like a totally unique story. So it's always like crazy talking like with everyone. But I grew up half Korean. My dad's Korean and my mom is like American, but with Irish roots. And I grew up in this suburb called Grosse Pointe. It's right outside Detroit, Detroit, Michigan. And growing up, it was a pretty conservative, like white neighborhood. I think it's maybe gone a little bit more moderate like these days, but still pretty conservative, at least in my head. It was always really strange growing up. It gave me, like, along with being mixed race, like, because being mixed race is already like a mind fuck on its own. So like growing up in that environment was really hard. And I hold no blame really for anyone except for like white supremacy. Cause like my parents did everything they could and everything to like help us feel like comfortable. And my mom would come to school during Lunar New Year and teach all my classmates about Lunar New Year. And it was like, that was like a really like beautiful thing. But it just couldn't really help the feeling of like alienation from classmates and stuff, and kind of just not really having people like see you for half of yourself, you know, like you have your American like Grosse Pointe identity, but a lot of your classmates don't really understand the rest of your identity. And so that's kind of huge, honestly, just like not being able to see someone fully. And I was thinking about this today, like I keep in contact with some friends on Instagram from like high school or earlier. And like there were other people of color who went to school with me, but it was so scattered and like, you know, rare that we never really got to like formally bond on those things. So like sometimes catching up with people from like back in my early days was like really strange, because like we didn't really even get to see each other for like what we were, even though we had this thing that we could bond on. And it does make me sad a little bit to think about it. But I guess it all contributed to like my perspective on the world, I guess. And I still like value growing up definitely in those circumstances.
Yeah, because we were all trying so hard to assimilate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Trying so hard to fit in.
Yeah. My dad came over from Korea when he was like, I think 6 years old. And so him and his family like went, moved to Detroit, and my dad went to kindergarten not speaking any English. And like, I can't even imagine like what that was even like. So just the amount of like aggressive assimilation, like, it was very, very evident growing up for me. Yeah. And definitely my dad. But
Do you have family in Korea?
Yeah, I do. Not super close, but I went to go visit Korea once. My parents and my sisters lived in Korea for like a few years before I was born. But then I had never been back or been there ever. So I went one time a few years ago, like before the pandemic, and I stayed with an uncle. And it was kind of strange because I just went by myself and I didn't really, it was like monsoon season too, and it was like raining, and like it was kind of a strange moment. Like I was back, or I was there in Korea for the first time, and it's just kind of
weird. You went by yourself?
Yeah, because I did a study abroad thing in Shanghai over the summer for 1 year at NYU, and I just tacked it on to that semester. So just for a few days, though. It's kind of weird.
Wow. I always feel like it's such an intimate experience when you travel alone.
Yeah.
Your experience of a place.
Totally. It was a little bit too much, I think. I almost wish that I went with, like, I don't know, maybe my family would have been nice. But it was kind of a strange experience, definitely.
Yeah. What was coming up for you when you were there?
I think it was just like I definitely just felt like such a foreigner, and like I am a foreigner, of course, but it's like I was looking for some sort of connection, I think, just because, like, you know, of course, my dad was born there and I have family there. But I think I wasn't super prepared for, like, how I, like, actually existed in that context, I think. So I was like, it was definitely a learning experience for me. It was fun though, but it was like shocking at the same time.
Yeah. You have a song on your album that is, Cyborg in Korean, and it's beautiful. It has, is it you speaking over the beat?
Yeah.
Can you talk about that? I've been so curious about it and what it means to you.
Yeah, I started learning Korean over the pandemic. It's just something that I've always really wanted to do, and I feel like language is such a important thing for like understanding a culture. It's just like a entirely like different perspective on like things. So I just felt like it was really important for me. And also my grandparents, like their English isn't so great like these days. So I've been really wanting to learn and try to speak with them, which is really hard. But yeah, I don't know. I just really wanted to like document my experience of like learning Korean. And so, taking that song and working with a translator and like having someone help me kind of rewrite these like Fall of the Cyborg lyrics in Korean, which is something that I felt really passionate about doing. And it was just like a fun like thing for myself and memory to like keep recorded and online.
It's great. I love that. I love that the cyborg has that dimension about them.
Yeah. Processing new languages and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I know that you have a huge interest in cybernetics, which I did not know what it was until I looked it up. And you're
Wait, I don't know if I know what it is.
Oh, I read in an interview. It was like they're really big into cybernetics. And I was like, whoa, let's look it up again.
No, I don't know.
Oh, it's the science of communications and automatic control systems in both machines and living things.
Okay,
that seems right. That seems right. And like we've been talking about so much, I feel like this aspect of where technology and creativity collide is so in the conversation right now, because AI is becoming more and more of a thing. And I was wondering how you feel about the rise of AI in our cultural creativity and how it feels like we can use it as a tool or something that could eclipse us eventually.
Yeah. It's just really funny because like this is like what all the movies leading up to this point are like. I feel like this is the beginning of the end, you know? Yeah. Like these AIs are gonna take over. But I don't know. I guess how I feel about it right now is like it's kind of just like a spectacle at this point. Like all this AI art is like cool because of the fact that it was made by a computer. But it doesn't really have anything else that I'm interested in besides the fact that it was made by a computer. So it's like, it can do cool tricks, but I think it's still like the human emotion or thought that's gonna like really connect to people. And at least when it comes to like art and stuff. So yeah, I don't really know. It's a weird thing that's happening, but it's almost like we're like letting the prophecy come true by being like, oh my God, AI, no, monsters.
Have you ever messed around with Midjourney or any of those AI generators?
No.
Oh,
no,
it's so funny.
Like the ones where you can type in like random words and then it like comes up with a picture like depicting it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it sounds crazy.
My bandmates in San Fermín are obsessed with it. And they just, yeah. Our group chat is a horrific place, but it's full of like, look, I looked up San Fermín on tour in a Sprinter van. And yeah. It is eerily accurate. It has like,
really?
Yeah. I mean, it's so funny because San Fermín is a very diverse band. It's got like a black guy and like an Asian girl and like a couple of Hoppas and stuff. And yeah. It's all the people that Midjourney generates are like these ethnically ambiguous people. And the lighting of it feels like a Renaissance painting. It's like, but the thing is, you know that something's off because the facial expressions are very unidentifiable. Like the emotion, that it's sort of like, I'm making a face to Margaret that where I feel like I've just been punched in the face. It's that's the one aspect of it that I'm not sure how long it's going to take to generate confusion or joy or something, because it's so unique to each person.
Yeah, totally. And actually, even I like listening to like podcasts on like psychology and stuff. And I feel like even humans are bad at telling each other when we're like, how, yes. Like when someone's confused or when someone's happy or when someone's mad, you know, it's like, how can a machine do it if we even can't do it yet? So.
Yeah, exactly. It is fascinating. Which is that something that you have any interest in exploring in your music, like any sort of AI?
I don't know. That sounds scary to me. I think I'll try my, I mean, it is nice, honestly, like having there's like a lot of plugins where you can have someone or have the computer automatically like master your music, which I feel
that
like
seems
honestly
great to me.
Right? I know, like, especially for if we're not getting paid like as artists, then we need like tools to help us cut the cost.
Yeah, we can get whatever, we can take whatever we get.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, some of that stuff is just interesting. Yeah. I don't know.
Dude, a mastering engineer would be great.
Right?
Like,
yeah, sorry, mastering engineers listening.
But if you think about it, like, built-in drum loops and, like, places like Splice and even synthesizers are a form of AI. It's like,
yeah,
they're
totally.
They already come with presets that can be manipulated depending on whether you want more or less of something. So hopefully we'll still be holding the reins.
I guess... But yeah, I mean, I guess that's the thing. When it comes down to it, it's all about like the responsibility of like people that are making these products is like we need to be making tools and technology that are gonna, you know, do people good and not like focusing on making these like monsters and like just machines to do cool tricks or like take us to space when we like don't even have things like figured out here. It's like we need to make useful tools and technology, guys. So
yeah, really. This has been such an inspiring conversation, and I'm gonna take it with me throughout the rest of the week. I so appreciate you taking time to talk to me, and I just can't wait to see what's next for you.
I am such a big fan, and so this was so amazing. So thank you.
Yay. Oh, thanks, Margaret. Thank you so much again to Margaret for joining us on the show today. You can find them on Instagram at @miss_grit. And their most recent album, Follow the Cyborg, is available everywhere now. Please subscribe, follow, and rate the podcast on whatever platform you listen to. Your engagement really, really helps us make the show better and gets it out to more ears and eyes and hearts. We absolutely love hearing from you. Tell us what you think about the show. Give us an alternative to the golden shower and who you'd like to hear about in future episodes. You can DM us on Instagram at goldenhourpod or email us at goldenhour@gmail.com. Golden Hour is created by me and produced and edited by Dave Yim, proudly part of the Potluck Podcast Collective. Thank you so much for listening. Can't wait to see you next time. Bye.